how would you categorize somebody a man? Is it by what he likes to do? Is you're a man someone who plays sports, drinks a beer, watches baseball, lifts weights? I feel like in today's world, being a man is so much more than just the traditional idea of what men should do. Same thing with being a female.
Yeah.
I feel like the lines have now essentially blurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I've always been an athlete, but I love getting dressed up and looking pretty and doing my hair and all the things. And if you identify that as female, then I'm totally female. And whatever you personally think that trait belongs, whatever column you may want to call it, I think it goes back to choice and what we choose to identify that as.
As a Black woman, we are identified as strong, as angry, as unloved, unlovable, and everything in the world, everything that you can think of. But we aren't. We're the most nurturing women in general, but especially African-American women, because I am one. We are nurturing. We are lovable. And yes, we're strong because we've had to fight for so long. Mm-hmm. So therefore, my strength isn't my weakness.
Right.
It's what makes me who I am. For a long time, I would think that, oh, Diana, you know, you have to speak properly because, you know, if you want to get ahead, you know, you kind of have to play the game. And then I watched Angela Rye on CNN. And let me tell you something. Anytime anybody says anything at work, I'm going to let them have it. Because to me, I feel like she represents who I want to be as a woman, never forgetting who I am. And if I want to switch it up, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. I'll go get a manicure. I'll go get a pedicure.
I'll go get a pedicure.
Man, I
love that.
Love when men do that.
Yeah.
And I identify as a male.
As a male.
Yeah. But it feels good and it looks good and it's clean. So I'm going to do it and it is what it is.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen. I'm Preen.
What up, though? It's Sky.
Do you just try to like think of the coolest, most corny intro?
Honestly, it takes no effort. It's just the words that come out of my mouth.
I'm just
naturally corny. And so, I mean,
I thought you were
going to
say cool. I thought you were going to pick the better adjective.
No. I recognize that I'm not cool. I think that what makes me cool is the fact that I recognize
that
I'm not cool.
Not.
And I embrace the fact that I'm really
that
corny. And I
that
think
cool.
That's why people like me. Because they're just like, oh, like she's not, like she thinks she's funny.
She's really not that.
It's cute that she thinks she's funny.
Right.
I'm going to go with it.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. That's your charm.
That's my charm.
That's your charm.
You know? It's how I get through life.
It's how you get through life.
Yes.
I love you for it.
And I love you for loving me.
I love you for loving me. You see what this is? You all see this is us. Not the NBC show.
Oh my God, I just started watching that show. It's so good.
Girl.
Don't tell me anything. I'm still in season one.
Have you seen the memes?
I'm still in season one. No, don't tell me.
Okay.
But Randall is everything and he's precious and he must be protected at all costs. Also, Sterling K. Brown is fine. But anyway.
Okay. All right. We're going to.
So this is a. We're changing the theme of our podcast to a conversation about This Is Us by first generation Americans.
Right.
So it still kind of ties in.
You know, it's, you know, blended family, you know.
So episode one. No, I'm kidding.
We're just kidding.
We're not really doing that.
But what we really are doing.
If you do want to talk about This Is Us, like add us and we can chat on any of the social media. So
we'd
let us
be happy to discuss any and every episode of This Is Us on our social media.
No spoilers,
at
people.
First Gens, that's number one.
STGENS.
We're here for it. But what we're also really actually here for, guys, is to talk about femininity, Sky.
Femininity.
So Sky, like growing up, what, like, were you girly? I actually already know the answer to this. You know, there's these things called Barbie dolls. There's these things called easy bake ovens. There's these things called ice cream makers, you know. There's all these things. Like, Lord. How do you think that all, like,
so
played into
first
your identity?
Of all, if you don't know, Perrine brought up all those specific toys because I owned the whole... Well, I don't feel right saying I own them. My parents bought them for me as a child. Like lots of Barbies, like she said, the Easy Bake Oven, the ice cream maker, like the domestic-y.
Isn't that something? All the domestic.
All of those types of
toys.
Things.
Domestic toys.
Right. So, I mean, growing up, I mean, and to this day, I don't really think I'm a super feminine person. I'm actually more feminine now than I was when I was younger. But like, I have, like, as you can hear right now, my voice is quote unquote deeper than most like cis women. That's what people have always told me.
Really?
Yes. Growing up, my mother said that like she likened my voice to Jodie Foster's voice because Jodie Foster's known for like her raspy, like deeper voice. And so like she was always like, "You sound just like Jodie Foster. I love your voice." And like, I mean, she loved my voice. Like yeah. It was always in a very supportive way.
Right.
But then like sometimes when someone would call the house and I was kind of like the little like secretary because I loved answering the phone and like because I like to know who was calling. I'm nosy. so I would always run and get the phone and like people would mistake me for my brothers or they would just like think that I was like and not necessarily even saying like, oh, well, like you sound like this brother in particular. It was just like you sound like a boy is what I would hear. And like at school, I got teased for having like a deeper voice. I mean, I do like my voice isn't necessarily high. And this is actually like the way I speak now is naturally higher than I normally speak is because like over the years it got to me and like I just like trained myself to more naturally speak in a higher register than I normally do. And so how I speak now is a lot different than how I spoke when I was a child. Mm-hmm. Because like I spent so much time that now it comes more naturally to me in a higher register. So yeah, like but I wasn't like a feminine kid. I didn't like, I hated wearing dresses so much because like I couldn't like run around in them like the way I wanted to. Like I couldn't like just like plop down on the ground and like spread out like I wanted to.
And your backyard was lit.
It was. And I loved to be outside. Like I like to play. I like to like do things. And so like dresses aren't really conducive to doing things. So like as a child, I don't think it was necessarily me like rebelling against femininity. It's just like my natural nature is to like want to be in things and want to be as comfortable as possible.
Yeah.
Like to this day I try to only wear clothes that are comfortable to me.
That's real.
And like the majority of the dresses my mom would buy me weren't. They had like the tulle inside or whatever, like the itchy stuff. And then like also because like my mom is a black woman from Liberia, like she liked to put me in stockings.
All the white
and
tights.
So like yeah, so like the white stockings, itchy. A slip, like
so
the tulle. It was so many layers. It was so hot. Like I couldn't like hang out with my brothers the way that they were hanging out. Like they were like up and running around, and like I just wanted to be like in quote unquote with them. So like I wanted to be doing the same thing.
You have three brothers.
And I couldn't do it because like I have to watch my dress and I can't get it dirty. And of course my brothers were told not to get their like suits or whatever dirty, but like not in the same way that I was told.
Yeah.
Like I was, you know, the only daughter, and so I was the one who was I always felt like growing up I felt like very much like a doll for my parents. Like and I won't even just put it on my mom because I feel like for my father too, was like they both like, you know, like did my hair really nicely and wanted me to keep it nice and like would put me in really like cute dresses, which like looking back, I looked adorable. Don't get me wrong. But I was just so highly uncomfortable with the material itself. And so like for a while, what I equated like femininity with was like that uncomfortableness and like I thought I was uncomfortable with femininity and I thought I was uncomfortable with that aspect before like, and it took me until college to realize like, I don't actually hate dresses. I hate the dresses my mom put me in.
Okay.
I actually love a good dress like in the summer in the heat when it's hot, like you just get the air flowing. It's great circulation, you know?
Yes.
Like I love a cute dress and I like to look nice or whatever. Whether like, and by looking nice, I don't mean like looking feminine. I just mean that I like to dress up sometimes. But like, I didn't realize that like growing up, I didn't realize that femininity didn't have to be this very narrow definition that like I felt like I was being placed into. And over the years, I found my own version of femininity. And it's just been like, it's been a process throughout all of these years to find that.
Yeah. Oh, those dresses.
Whereas Perrine over here was Miss Cheerleader, and she always came over and wanted to play Barbies, and I wanted to like
hit
her
over
the head with the Barbies.
She had the best. Like, she had my dream toys, and I got nothing.
I had like, nothing.
Nothing. If I don't have that Barbie Corvette. I also had a Barbie Corvette. Actually, I had that.
Everything.
I loved it.
And a Jeep. Like, you had a Barbie Jeep, too, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that's what I had, the Barbie Jeep. My bad.
The one that you ride in.
Like, I used to be driving.
As a child.
Oh, it was so
and her
dope,
hill, the
y'all.
Hills in her backyard were so much fun.
It was, off.
I would get so hyped to go to Sky's house, guys. Like, it was literally the best thing for, a little girl. Because, again, she was such a little princess and spoiled.
I had the canopy bed.
Right.
With, the Disney princess sheets, everything was so pink, and I hated the color pink.
And I lived for it.
Right, to me, everything was so pedestrian, and Perrine would just come over with her, bright eyes and
here.
So excited, and I would, I'd be like a cat.
You'd
be
just
like,
it's whatever. Like,
hey, girl, whatever. I guess we can play Barbies because I have to be a good hostess.
Right, and I have all the outfit changes, and just, it's whatever.
I'm not gonna lie, I don't think I've ever told you this. I didn't know how to relate to you because you were so girly, you were so feminine, and I wasn't, and I felt really sometimes I feel really out of place around you.
Really?
It wasn't until college that I was this is a real human person. That I can talk to normally. Right. I didn't see the ways in which we could truly connect until then. Cause I felt a barrier of feminine, and it wasn't just you, it was really any woman, any girl who was feminine. I didn't know how to connect with them.
That's so
because
interesting.
I felt so out of place.
Yeah. Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Because so growing up for me, as far as my nicknames, Miss P, Sis Katie, which just translates as Sister Katie. And I don't know who this Sister Katie is, but I think she is a sassy, extra flamboyant woman from Liberia that my uncle knew, because Sis Katie, I don't know who Sister Katie is, guys. I need to find out.
Hashtag where's Katie?
Hashtag
oh my God, this should be the
Sister
next
Katie.
Episode, a thing of serial.
Oh my God.
Finding Katie.
Finding Katie, because I need to know where this chick is, because I don't know her.
Season 3.
I don't
first
know.
First gens.
Though I don't know
Katie.
Her, I am her. So it's interesting, but. It was always bluff girl and all these different things. And when we say bluff girl, it's just when we say you like to bluff, it's you like to show off. Mm-hmm. You like to be fancy.
Every time
you're bougie.
I show out,
you like to be dressed up and dolled up. Yes.
Right.
Thank you. That soundtrack. And so that was how I was just always kind of described as a kid, growing up. And I think it just... I just loved the things. And my mom played into it, because she was very much so, always liked to be put together and would, dress me and my sister up in, matching,
twins.
Floral jumpsuit, even though she was 5 years older than me. But, when Sky was, talking about, the dresses and stuff, my mom had, the matching headband with the floral dress. With the tights, with the shoes, and I'm I'm ready. Where's the camera? I'm ready for my close up. Let's do
She's
this.
She's still the exact
I
same way
I am the doll.
To this
let's
day.
Do this. And so it's so funny because when I was really little, that was just who I was, And I fed into it, and I loved it, and I lived for it. Even though I may not have gotten as many toys. That's why when I would go to Skies, it was just I got all my life and energy from it. And I really think I did kind of early on see, I know this sounds weird, fashion as self-expression, because I really felt that's who I was and that's how I wanted to display myself to the world. But my mom was also very conscientious about how we presented ourselves. So that internally manifested into, I think, my perception of how I want it to be perceived. So even to this day, my mom will just come up and start adjusting me or start adjusting like my niece and my sisters and whatnot. Like whether it's she thinking that I intentionally rolled the bottom of my jeans up. My mom will just come and unroll it like, oh, you missed it. Like, and it's like, no, mama, like this is how I want to wear this.
It's fashion.
This is fashion. This is what I want to do. And it was all like very interesting because I was very into how I appeared and how I looked and fashion and clothes and hair and makeup and all of that stuff. And so when I decided to go into the fashion industry, it was just like no surprise. I think when I tell older people who haven't seen me in a long time and they're like, oh, you still a bluff girl. And I'm like, well, I went into fashion. Like, you know, I really, really have always been that flamboyant girl person. But I think that in a way it's negatively affected me. And more so recently, I went through like a lot of self-discovery for the past, like last year. So like 2017 was a very like difficult, interesting year for me. And one of those things that I was able to reflect and look at about myself was that I'm a Kanye West stan, and it's no surprise that when Kanye West said in, I think, is it All Falls Down? Well, man, I promise, she's so self-conscious. She has no idea what she's doing in college. When he talked about just how the prettiest people do the ugliest things and how he couldn't go out without a shirt with the team, like, when he was just like very like self-conscious and aware about how he appeared like all the time, that resonated with me, you know, and it still resonates with me. But I got to the point, not just like I just threw my hands in the air and said like F it, but I before think that everyone's expectation of me was to be like perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, because my mom kind of set that standard, like wanting us always to look perfect. And then me kind of being like, okay, like me looking perfect feeds into my self-worth and how I appear. So I always need to be perfect. Like, I feel that also played into like in high school, like how like I dressed and how I appeared and like always wanting my hair to be done in college. Like even when we would have like exam days, like I wouldn't, no, you won't, you will not catch me slipping. No, sweatpants, why? No. Like, you would never catch me. Like, and I always felt kind of that pressure. Like, that was just who I was. But I fed into it. Like, that's who I have to be. Mm-hmm. And so now I am at a point where I will definitely wear sweatpants. I'll definitely not wear makeup. I'll definitely, like, not wear, you know, whatever. I'll throw, like, a beanie on my head. Not just because I had a hard night, but because I'm fine with my hair not being perfect for something. I finally have gotten to that place of self-acceptance and self-reassurance, because I think that was something really hard for me to grapple with for a long time. Because when someone or people set a very high expectation for you and how they think you're supposed to appear, you really have to evaluate that into just who you are and why you're doing it in the first place. So I like makeup because I think it's just fun. And I love lip gloss because I think it's great. Who doesn't want their lips popping? Like, Lil Mama wrote the whole song. Like,
what you know about me? What you know? So my lip gloss is popping. You knew that was my coming. Lip gloss is cool.
You knew that was coming.
I wasn't going to do it because you were having an intimate, serious, self-reflective, therapeutic moment. But then you said Lil Mama. And I was like, well, girl, she wants this to happen.
She's literally begging me to do it. Just do it. And I appreciate that about you, without the drop of a hat. And so I change my hair up as often as the wind blows south because I can, you know, like, and I think for me, I was also having another like more recent, like self-reflection. Like I have like natural hair and, I think I went natural maybe like 3.5, like 4 years ago. And I did like a slow transition. And honestly, the reason why I do my hair and I know how to do my hair is because my sister was a beautician who always stood me up for hair appointments. And whenever she was supposed to do my hair, she never did my hair. And because I was the kid who was like, I have to be together, I had to teach my, I taught myself because I was like, well, this hair is going to get done. So let me figure it out.
This hair going to get laid one way.
This hair is going to get laid, you know, no YouTube, but I'm flipping through the magazine or the hair vibe or whatever it was called. The ones that you see at the beauty salon, you know what I'm talking about, and did it. And so for me switching up like my hair or like me like wearing different makeup or like not wearing makeup, it's all because of my choice. It's because I want to do it. It's no longer I feel self-conscious and I think I have to have like long hair or I think I have to have like this perfect texture, whatever. I just, if I want long hair, I'm going to have long hair because I can. And if I want curly, like my hair to be curly and out and just how it is, it's because I can and I want to. It's not because of what someone else is expecting me to do. It's my own personal choice and what I prefer and what I like. Because I can do it. Black girl magic.
Do it, sister. And I think it's also like important to always remember that like everything, it's all on just like a big spectrum, right? Like, and so like however feminine or masculine or not you want to be, like it's all kind of more intrinsic and it takes, you know, playing around with it and like really figuring it out for yourself. And so like it wasn't until I got to college where I was like, okay, I'm away from my mom, like I can wear a dress and like if I like it, that's great, but like I'm also not gonna feel like I have someone breathing down my neck to do it more often. Or like if I want to like, you know, like wear button ups or whatever more often, or like baggy jeans or whatever, like however it is I wanted to express myself, I felt more open to do it because I didn't feel like pressure from anybody to be any one particular way.
Yeah. And you said you felt like that in college.
Yeah.
I think I honestly finally got there like last year.
We're all on our own journeys.
Right.
But I mean, also, I think that you kind of like did a really good job in high school, too, of like not just being like this stereotypical, quote unquote, like cheerleader or like feminine person. Because like you play basketball, like you played sports. You were in there, like you were still a physically like active person, which is, you know, contrary to like probably most of the other girls on the cheerleading team with you. And so like I always like saw that in you growing up, because like even like you would be like watching pro wrestling with like me, my brothers, and your brother Eric, you know, like and like into it and be like, yeah, get them, and like, you know, doing the little like fake punches with us. So
that's very true. But what I've always, I think, loved and appreciate about like my mom, like my mom like loves sports, like she loves like watching sports, she loves like wrestling. My mom drinks Heineken's, like, but she's like the most like petite, like heel wearing, like
curls, woman, everything.
Yeah,
but like she will be there like yelling at the TV during a Carolina basketball game
even more than me, and I yell a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think that was a really awesome, just another like view of what it means to like be feminine or be a woman and how that all plays into like my identity too.
This is Emmanuel's story.
My name is Emmanuel Aqua and I identify as male and I am Ghanaian American. I grew up in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is in West Canada, and I loved it. The experience there was great. And as a kid, you are naive to a lot of things. You just care about going outside, playing, riding your bike, roller skating, playing basketball, just everything a kid should be concerned about doing. Growing up in, now we fast forward, and growing up in Greensboro, North Carolina, I feel like I became more aware of what I was and who I was. I was 12 or 13 when we first moved here, and I started sixth grade in Greensboro, North Carolina. Everybody used to say that I was always smiling and I was a happy kid. And if you know me now, you can tell that I'm very much a thinker now, and I'm very much I don't easily smile about things. It's because I'm always, I feel like I'm always calculating things in my head. But growing up in Greensboro was an interesting experience from middle school to high school. So much to the point now that I don't necessarily enjoy going back to Greensboro today. So growing up in Canada compared to growing up in Greensboro, when I lived in Vancouver, Vancouver was a transient place. It was, I think, the second largest city in Canada at the time, and it still may be to this day. It's a gorgeous place, but you have Native Americans, you have a lot of Indian people, you have a lot of Asian people, whether it be Korean, Filipino, Chinese, Japanese, and then you have a decent group of African people there. So I remember the neighborhood that I lived in, I had a friend that lived two doors down, Elliot. He was Native American. Then I had another friend that lived three doors down. He was Kenny. He was Korean. And I went to school, and I mean, I was friends with a girl that was Japanese and Canadian. And so you see people from all different backgrounds and cultures, and it was normal. It was normal. Granted, I will say it wasn't perfect. I mean, you still hear comments about your dark skin and being black and everything. And I think a lot of that has to do with the stigma of African people in North America in general. But as a kid, I loved it. I mean, the friends I had there, I mean, I never felt like I was different, even though my parents probably wouldn't make comments and try to make you aware that you are different. I never felt I was different. So we fast forward 12 years old, 13 years old. Traditionally, as a male, you are going through puberty. You're more aware of things, more aware of who you are. You're considered to be, I mean, not necessarily adult, but it's like the beginning of teenage years, right? And so once you start that, it's girls. Girls become something that you are interested in. Or you're supposed to be interested in. And then after that, on top of it, you start to realize the differences. And I feel like, and I don't want to make this a thing about race, male, female. I think every 14-year-old kid starts to realize changes in their body. And I think that's when they start to become more self-aware of how the world perceives them. And then they start to make decisions on what they feel like they should be based on how the world perceives them. And I feel like that's about the age that happens, right? So at adolescent, you're carefree. You don't care about anything. All you care about is whatever makes you happy at that time. And life is pretty much simple then. I feel like it's when you get to the teenage years where the floodgates open of social pressures and conforming to social like norms and just wanting to be something probably that you're not at that time, right? And I think I went through that pretty significantly in Greensboro, primarily when I was in sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, and even when I went to high school as well. So Greensboro was one of these places for me where I had a lot of good memories there, but I don't really necessarily look at it as a good time in my life. I feel like I wasn't who I was because I wanted to be something I wasn't. That probably makes me sad. It's probably the way I would characterize that. And it's funny because I have a son and I very much don't want him to do that. I want him to be unapologetically himself and want him to understand that if people don't like you, that's a them problem. It's not a you problem. I think I realized that I was running a rat race and I was trying to be like everybody else, but I've always felt like, and it's probably going to sound kind of conceited, but I've always felt like that I was special, right? And I've always felt like I have more to offer this world than just to be somebody who is literally running in the hamster wheel and just blending in, right? And I think for so long I cared so much about blending in and not necessarily standing out to an extent. My sophomore year, I think I realized that I was different and I always was going to be different. I was an African American male in this country. a lot of the issues that are going on with African-American males could easily happen to me. I'm unique in that I have a perspective where I have parents who are from Ghana. I was even born in Ghana. And then to the point where because my parents are from Ghana, we've traveled, right? I've seen different perspectives of people. I think that gave me, and I think self-awareness is a gift, to be honest with you, because a lot of people think they're self-aware, but I think so many of us are not self-aware. But nobody will tell you that I'm not self-aware, right? Everybody will argue and say, no, I understand who I am. But you look and you can kind of tell that person's doing or chasing something that's just that they never seem to capture, right? And I feel like when I became a sophomore in college, I just realized that this is me. I mean, this is me. Everything that I probably didn't want to be between the age of 13 and 19 or 20, even 20 maybe, everything that I didn't want to be, I am, but I needed to embrace it. I needed to understand it. I needed to grow in it. I needed to be that, but I didn't also have to be necessarily a stereotype also, right? I didn't have to be what the world says that I'm supposed to be. I could be whatever I wanted to be within being myself. And so that was probably a liberating time for me. If you ask my wife, that's about the time that we probably met, sophomore, junior year in college. I think every year outside of that, I've become more and more and more self-aware. And I've honestly, I think, grown in who I am today, right? I mean, it's funny. If you would have asked me if I would have given my child a Ghanaian middle name, I would have told you there's no chance. But I did. But if you would ask me that 10 years ago, I would have been like, no, I'm not giving him a Ghanaian middle name. But I did, because I'm embracing that and I'm proud that I'm that now. If you asked me what it means to be a man, my honest answer back to you would be, I don't know. And I say that because I think the definition of what a man is, based on what society determines what is manly, has changed significantly from probably the 1930s to 2018 today. I think back then it was, you know, men, boys don't cry. They don't show emotion. They're supposed to handle all the finances in the house. They do all the labor intensive work, right? And then you fast forward to today. What does it mean to be male or female today, right? I mean, there are females who you know, depict masculine, and I'm using air quotes, masculine characteristics. And then there are males who depict female characteristics. But even then, it's like we're stuck in this or I guess I don't want to call it a continuum, but a scale, right, of what's feminine and what's masculine. And I feel like we have somehow identified certain emotions, certain attributes, certain actions as female, and then vice versa for male. But it's like, who determined that in the first place? Because realistically, as humans, don't we all feel the same thing? Like, don't we all feel the same baseline of emotions as humans? I think you get down a slippery slope, especially if you have kids and you tell them, boys don't do this, or girls don't do this. It's kind of like, I just feel like, what if your kid is meant to do those things? I feel like there's a plan for everybody. And I feel like your plan, you know what your plan is. Like, deep down, I think everybody has an idea of what is really calling and tugging at them, right? And I think sometimes we may stifle those feelings and calls based on what society is saying you should or should not be. And I am definitely anti that. I'm against that 1,000,000%. So growing up until even today, my parents, what they taught me about being a man is that men cook, and this is all based on observing what my parents do. Men cook, men clean, men do the laundry. You know, in our society, guys kind of have, like, when I was going through puberty, armpit hair, right? To the point where my dad was like, you need to shave that. And I'm thinking, what? Why should I shave that? Guys don't shave their armpit hair. But my dad is telling me, you need to shave that because it's not attractive, basically. And I just thought that, and looking back at that now, I mean, that's hilarious when you think about it. I'm like, that's, and so, but I will say the one thing where I feel like that lacked in my household from a male standpoint was probably emotional intelligence. And it was probably the lack of emotion from my father. And so to the point where I think I probably am a little bit, if you say the average emotional intelligence is measured here, I probably would say I'm probably a little bit behind that because I just didn't see that from my dad. And I'm not necessarily saying my dad said, guys don't show emotion. I just feel like because you didn't see it from your dad, it just became something that you just inherently picked up and probably learned. And so much to the point where my sister just gave birth to a baby boy, Levi, and she was in the hospital, and my dad came in and gave her a hug and kiss on the forehead, and she kind of told me, she said she gave him the side eye and was like, who are you right now? It's weird. The day I watched my son be born, it was a waterfall of emotion that I hadn't ever really identified with ever in my life, to the point where I was crying uncontrollably. I couldn't speak. I was in awe at the same time. And it's just overwhelming feeling of pride and happiness and joy. And it was just like this, literally the floodgates of emotion. Just like, it was like someone just kicked the door down. That was really, really cool. Because I think most people who know me, I'm pretty straight faced about a lot of things. And for that to happen, I mean, it was awesome. And even and let me take a step back. Even then, the day I got married, I sobbed uncontrollably when I was reading my vows, because it was another thing of just uncontrollable emotion. And I think a lot of that is all has to do with just like the lack of emotional like awareness I had and where I was on the emotional scale of compared to everybody else. It's like I just hadn't let myself feel those things throughout my life, and honestly throughout my even dating life, for a long time. So all these like new experiences have been good for me, I think, right? And so much to the point where I know that I want my kid to feel deeply about things, and I mean I kiss him every day, multiple times a day, but I can't tell you the last time my dad kissed me, like I'm talking about like on the forehead or anything like that. I can't tell you. And it's like, I think Allie asked me one day, where do you think this comes from? Because, I mean, I know your dad's not like that. And I was like, yeah, I have no idea. I just don't. I just think it's been part of the personal growth. The things I hope to teach my son on life in general, for me, it's simple. Attitude and effort. There are a lot of things in this world that you cannot control. I would argue... probably 75% of things that happen to us in life are probably out of our control. But you can always control your attitude, and you can always control your effort, no matter what situation you're put in. So for me, knowing that, seeing how I was raised and what my mom and dad went through in raising us, I want to teach him to work hard. I want to teach him to respect people, no matter who they are, whatever the circumstances, always respect people. And I'm always going to teach him that nothing is given to you at all, ever. With that said, the reason why I want to instill those things in my son, because he's multicultural and he's biracial. And unfortunately, I think the world will see him as black because he will have brown skin. And so, and this actually scares me for him, because he's going to have to work harder than his white counterparts. He doesn't know it yet, but he will. He's going to have to work harder than them. And I think I'm even getting ahead of myself, so let me rewind. He's only a little baby right now, right? And it's like, and I talked about the character attributes that I want him to have. But even before that, I mean, I am guilty of being the dad that hopes and prays that he picks up a ball and wants to play sports. I mean, so much to the point where I'm trying to get him, I'm actively like probably trying to condition him to do that, right? And I don't, and some of it is intentional, but some of it's unintentional because I just love sports so much, and I feel like it's been, in our country, it's a measure of success. It's also a measure of several things, right? I think if you're good at sports, people tend to like you more. People tend to give you a pass at certain things. And then also, I really think he could be really talented. I mean, at something, right? But Allie always has to check me on that really quickly. She's like, what if he wants to do ballet? And I'm like, well, damn it. If he wants to do ballet, he's going to be the best ballet dancer possible. If he wants to do music, he's going to be the best at it possible. And it's kind of like, no matter what he wants to do, I'm really okay with no matter what he wants to do. And realistically, what I will do is follow his lead and just see where he his interest tends to go and kind of, I'm not going to push him anyway. And I've already made up my mind, I'm never coaching him in anything because I will be the obnoxious dad coach. And I know that. So I'm not going to do that. But I want him to work hard at whatever he wants to do. And I want him to do well at whatever he wants to do. I think the reason why I hope Owen ends up doing something in sports and then, or not even hope, the reason why I'm pushing him that way, let's just call it what it is. I think whether or not I say I'm pushing or not pushing, I'm slightly pushing my kid that direction. But I think it all has to do with the fact that for me, it was always easier to be accepted because I was a little bit more athletically gifted. It's you compete, you beat somebody, and then you gain people's respect. I mean, it was as simple as that. And if you look at me, I am darker than most African American people. So it's easier for people to, especially when you're a kid, pick on you based on your skin color, based on the fact that your parents are from Ghana, based on the fact that your family may not necessarily have the amount of wealth or money that the next people do. But when it comes to man versus man, it was always, for me, if I could beat you, it was like, in my mind, you're no better than me. You may have all these other things that you think that you're better, that make you feel better, but you're not better than me. And I think for me, it was the way that I probably coped with a lot of the gender identity, not even the gender identity, but cultural and racial identity. I mean, just the identity of who I was in general was driven into sports. And I think that's why I have such I would call it a relationship with sports. I mean, it's just, and everything positive that I can think of from my childhood is closely associated with sports. I don't have one negative memory of sports. I mean, sure, I've lost games, I've gotten hurt, but you always come back and you do it again and you do it again. And it's funny because as I've gotten older, and what I mentioned in sophomore year in college is when I kind of felt like I grew into who I was, I stopped playing as much sports as I did. I became less serious about playing sports. Basketball wasn't that important to me. I played flag football, but I didn't actually care if I was that great at it or not. I did it because I generally did it for fun, just to hang out with my friends and my roommates. Recently, I've been thinking about Owen and his sexual orientation and what he's going to prefer when he's older, right? And I think we live in a time right now where it's the possibilities, and he's going to be exposed to a lot more of everything else, right? Hopefully by the time that he ends up being a teenager or whatever. And I was wondering to myself, I was like, am I going to have an issue if Owen is gay? And I started thinking about it. And I think just naturally, I think I kind of am bothered by it. But I'm not bothered by it because I think he shouldn't be gay. I'm bothered by it because it's a life that is going to be very difficult for him. And that scares me for him. And then I go down the road and I start thinking selfishly, well, that also means, well, what about grandkids for me? What about passing on my name? And what about, I mean, I'm talking about biological kids, and I know there's ways of still doing that, and I'm not an idiot when it comes to that, but it's like all these things I started thinking, I just jumped down this rabbit hole in my mind. And then after that, I kind of come back, I'm like, you know what, I'm not even there yet, what am I doing? Like, is what am I doing? But then, and I'll be honest with you, it's like I think every human being has the right to choose who they love, and I don't have an issue with that. I hate that it's difficult for a lot of people, and I absolutely do. And I wish it were easier for people to do that. And the one thing I've decided is that no matter if that is the case or not the case, I want him to feel comfortable that he can come to me and not feel like I'm going to necessarily flip shit and completely disown my child, because I love that boy more than I probably love it myself, right? And so there's nothing that he can do wrong in my mind that I'm ever going to be, that I'm ever going to, you know, say or do to him that will sever our relationship, right? I mean, I don't want to imagine my life having to live a life without my kid, and then it breaks my heart for the people who have to live their lives without their kids, right? Because of that. And I think at the end of the day, your kid is going to make their own decisions in life. It is interesting the things you start to project onto your kids and what you want for them and all this stuff. And I think a lot of it just comes from the fear of just not wanting their life to be hard, period. I mean, we all being, you know, Liberian American, Ghanaian American, we know life is already hard as it is, just by adding a level of complexity, which is our culture and ethnicity, into the mix. And it's kind of like, I just don't want it to level up for him in any way. And so that's something that I often think about. I don't know why, but I do. What makes me the most proud to be Ghanaian, Canadian, American, is the fact that I know where I'm from, I know where I was, and I know where I am. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I know where my story started. And I think that's something that nobody can take away from me or any of my children to come, period. They will always know where their story. And I think there's something to be said about that, especially considering not all African Americans in this country can say that. I mean, a lot of people are doing their ancestry stuff, but I can actually tell you the names of my ancestors and my great grandfathers, and we can actually sit down and have a conversation about, you know, the villages my parents are from and everything, and my kids will be able to one day say, my lineage is traced back to Ghana, West Africa, and they can go to Cape Town, and then they can go to Accra, and they can go to all these places and know and feel some level of pride that they're from there. So that's the thing I'm probably the most proud of, being Ghanaian.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find us. We can also be found on SoundCloud and wherever else you get your podcasts. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at First Gens. That's the number 1, STGENS. Plus, get extra content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by Perrine DeShield. The show is co-hosted by Perrine and me, Sky Wilson. Our musical composer is the wonderful Nick Stubblefield. Special thanks to our roundtable guests, Diana, Jorge, and Jeannie. And a special thank you to Emmanuel for sharing his First Gen experience. First Gens is a proud member of Puga, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for taking a chance on us. Aww. You were amazing as always, of course.
Thank you.
I love talking to you.
Hi, Emmanuel.